I'm Angie and Jackie, sitting in a tree. K-I-S-S-I-N-G. First came love, then came marriage, then came the baby and the...
How are we gonna have a
step
baby?
Step one, find some sperm.
That guy? Or this guy? Well, he works at a law firm.
Step two, you gotta stick it in you.
IUI? IVF? OMG, WTF!
Step three, obsess a lot.
I'm gonna pee on this stick and I'm gonna watch the clock.
Okay.
Step four, repeat the first three.
I can't wait until we have a baby.
The Baby Mamas Podcast.
Welcome back to episode 31 of The Baby Mamas. How you guys been?
You always say welcome back. It's so nice of you to always welcome our listeners. Welcome back, everybody.
Hi. It's episode 31 of the... I don't know. It just sounds weird otherwise.
Okay. Hey, everybody. We're still here. We're still kicking it. And the baby's kicking it, too.
Oh, she's kicking it hard.
Yeah.
Like, this morning when I got into bed, I was like, whoa. Like, I was surprised that it didn't hurt you.
It's a little bit jarring when she kicks, like, my cervix or my bladder. Then I'm kind of like, ugh. But normally I just think it's awesome.
Yeah. What does it feel like?
It feels like, the best way I can describe it, when she's not, the squirming feels like something moving. Like, it feels like something inside your body moving. But the kicks feel more like a muscle spasm. Like, you know when you get a muscle spasm in your leg and your mm-hmm. muscles kind of moving involuntarily?
Mm-hmm.
That's the best way I can kind of describe it.
Hmm.
It's just sort of like you don't have control. It's not you. It's just something.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Interesting.
I still can't, like, fully fathom that there's something inside me, though. And I don't think that anybody really can.
No. It's kind of like a mind fuck.
It is.
Yeah.
And I keep reading these things like, she's supposed to be 12 inches long. And I'm like, how the fuck is a 12-inch long thing inside my body?
No, right now she's the size of an acorn squash, actually.
Whatever that means.
Yeah, I know. That's a variable. That's the thing with the fruit comparison. Like, are we talking organic fruit? Are we talking, like, naturally grown fruit? Or
GMO,
like,
bloated.
Yeah.
Craziness.
Yeah, like, it's a variable size. But I guess it's just to give you a general idea.
Yeah, also, like, the last one, I think, was, like, corn. So she was the same size as a piece of corn, and now she's an acorn squash, which, you know, which way?
Yeah.
In, like, width, depth? Because an acorn squash is smaller, to me, than a piece of corn.
It's shorter.
Yeah.
But it's wider.
I don't know.
Yeah, it's a weird thing. I mean, it's just generally giving you, like, our book gives us centimeters. So that's just, like, a length.
Yeah, that's nice to see, because then it makes sense more than
yeah.
fruits and vegetables.
Yeah.
Anyway, I wanted to start off with a tweet that we got.
Tweet! Tweet! Tweet, tweet!
At IndigoJK said, way behind on at Baby Mama's cast, and the Christmas episode is making me cry at work because I'm happy for them, because I want it so badly, and because we have to work so hard.
Aww.
Yeah. And then I was checking Twitter today, and this couple got to inseminate today.
Mm.
Yeah. Or what? Maybe it was yesterday. But anyway, it was sometime recently they did their first IUI. It's very exciting.
So exciting. Mm-hmm. It's also so stressful. We wish you luck and patience and very, very active sperm.
Yes. And I remember doing our first one, obviously. But it was just like, it was stressful, but it was also such a relief to be like, hey, finally we're doing something
mm-hmm.
about this, like, feeling of, like, that wanting it so badly. Okay, yeah. Now we're taking action on it. So
yeah,
it's like this relief, but also this, like, pressure and this stress.
Mm-hmm.
So we know how you're feeling.
Yeah, but it's strange. I was, like, thinking about this the other day. It feels so distant. All of that strife and the, like, anguish and the desperation. I felt desperate.
Yeah, that's,
you know,
a good way.
It feels really far away from where we are right now,
mm-hmm.
which is, hopefully that gives all of you out there who are still trying some hope, because it can be really tough when you're right in the middle of it. It can be really challenging. It can test your relationship. It can test, you know, just what you're capable of coping with. It can test your emotional strength, and it's just such a relief to be on this end of it. It really is.
Sorry that you guys aren't here, but you will
be. It's this is like a hopeful thing. Like, look forward to this, because mm-hmm. you won't feel that level, that depth of, like, struggle.
Yeah. forever. And hopefully once you're on this side of it, it's not as stressful.
Yeah.
That you'll be able to enjoy all the things that come along with being pregnant.
Because you just are enjoying every day feeling perfect and wonderful, right?
I will never complain about being pregnant. I have not said
no,
that
true.
Pregnancy sucks.
No, you never have. The only
I've
thing...
complained about aspects, mm-hmm. but I wouldn't ever be like, fuck, this sucks. Ugh.
You've never, neither of us have ever had a moment of like regret.
No, I mean, that would be ridiculous and crazy if we did.
Well.
Don't you think? We went through all this trouble.
Not like, for us, but I think people will can get into things thinking they want something, but maybe aren't like solid in the reason for it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Us queers try and have babies to fix relationships too.
Yeah.
It's not just
true.
Straight people that do that. It's just a lot harder.
Yeah.
So I think that doubt is not, we're not like protected from doubt, but we, luckily you and I, don't have any doubts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Any doubts we had were fleshed out long ago. Long ago.
I wanted to go over something that we talked about last week. Because when I was editing the podcast and I went back and I was like, this sounds really weird. I kept talking about how I'm actually happy that my mom didn't die, which looking like when I was listening back to it, made it seem like I should want her to die on a regular basis. And maybe I do. And that like, oh, Mother's Day, I don't actually want her to be dead. That's not the case.
No, but it's like a special circumstance. The way I hear that is like a lot of people, both in this circumstance, like in this situation with your mom and outside of it, would probably think maybe that would be a relief for her and everyone because her life is really hard. She doesn't have a whole lot of hope for happiness in this life. She struggles through a lot of things. So I think what you were trying to say is it was actually nice to have her come out the other side and be like relieved and to have that have been like a positive.
When she got in the accident, it was sort of like this out.
Mm.
And in a relief way.
Yeah.
Not in like a relief out of her pain, out of her suffering.
Yeah, for her.
Yeah.
Not
and
like,
not that I wanted her to die and that I've ever really thought. I mean, I've had moments where I'm like, maybe it would have been easier if, you know, the accident took her out because she seems to struggle so hard with just living.
Yeah.
And it's not.
And she did even before the accident. Like things were bad and getting worse before the accident. The accident made everything worse.
Yeah, and so it's not...
So to have gone through... I think what... If I can speak
I just
you.
Felt like it sounded really callous. Like, actually, I don't want my mom to die.
Yeah, but I think if people have listened to the whole thing, they kind of understand a bit better, like, who your mom is and what that relationship is like. But as I'm like to do in this relationship, I feel like... what I'm hearing you say and from what I know is that... You know, there have been a lot of points in your mom's life where it seemed like it would be better for her if she didn't have to struggle anymore. And this, for some reason, wasn't one of those for you.
I guess so.
And even if there is an element of that feeling, not this time, obviously, but like, you know, when she had cancer the second time or heart failure the second time or, you know, tried to kill herself for the last time. Well, not for the last time, but the last time. Even if there's a part of that thinking that's like, oh, this would be easier for her and for me, that's understandable. And it's okay. And it doesn't make you a monster. It just makes you a person that's dealt with somebody who's like chronically suicidal for your whole life.
Yeah.
So
but I'm
it's,
happy.
I just, it's okay for you to feel like that. Yeah.
Thanks.
Yeah.
But yeah, just to reiterate, I'm glad that she's come out the other end and she's able to, I mean, we're not there yet. Many things can happen, but she'll probably most likely meet her granddaughter.
Yeah. I actually just watched this video that we took of when we told your mom that we were pregnant, and it made me laugh. It was like one of the really nice bright moments with your mom.
Yeah.
It's nice to hang on to those because sometimes they're really few and really far between. But that one was so funny. And the last thing she says in the video, or no, one of, I don't think it was the last thing. Anyway, one of the things she says is like, because she was like, oh, like it's really, we were talking about how it was so early. It was only 2 weeks. And she was like, oh, it doesn't count. And we were like telling her like, no, it does count. And then you said, one of our friends said, enjoy it, whether you're 9 weeks or 9 months. And she said, oh, you won't. You won't enjoy it. It's awful.
Yeah.
And it's like,
thanks, Mom.
Okay. We just had this happy news. I mean, she was happy, but it's just funny that like, even in one of the happiest moments, she's still like, oh, it's going to be awful. And you're like, oh, right. You have to bring us down a little bit too. It hasn't been awful.
What hasn't been?
Your pregnancy.
No.
I think the hardest part, and I think you're going to yell at me for like bringing it up. But.
Don't even mention it. The hardest part, actually, way harder than food, which is what you're going to say, was the beginning, being stressed out and mm-hmm. thinking I was going to miscarry every day.
Mm-hmm.
That was the worst.
I think that's normal. But, yeah. I mean, yeah, that's hard, but that's like, there's a very, like, it's a short period of time that you feel like that. And then, but it's not that the food is hard, it's just constantly challenging. So, yeah. Like, the minute you think you've got it figured out, and this might not be the case for everybody, but it definitely is for you. Like, the minute we think we've got it figured out, the next day she's like, oh, I feel terrible, I feel sick, I haven't had enough of I don't know what.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's really, like, I have a really hard time with it because it makes me feel like I'm not doing a good enough job. Like, I feel like that's my job. That's something I can do is, like, feed you. I can have food ready. I can make sure we have good things in the house for you to eat to make you feel good. And when that doesn't work, I just feel like I'm failing.
You are. Anyway, so tell us one thing.
No, you can't just leave it like that. That's so mean.
You're doing a wonderful job. It has nothing to do with you. It's my whatever. I don't even know what. And I don't want to talk about it because that's how much I fucking hate food and eating right now.
Okay.
So.
Moving right along.
We have had another prenatal class mm-hmm. in the interim. What's one thing that you learned from like the last couple prenatal classes that you want to talk about?
Well, I learned that it takes a lot longer than I thought for the placenta to come out.
Yeah, me too.
And that it's like quite a complicated process because of the way people get involved in it. Like everyone's always trying to like speed it up and make it happen quicker. And like your body just lets like just I feel like the overarching like lesson of the class is like just stop fucking with your body. It's doing its thing. Let it do its thing. So like don't pull on the cord. And I really like the idea of like. The birth isn't over until the placenta has been birthed. So the minute the baby's out, don't get on the phone
that our doula's
and start like texting everybody and be like, oh, the baby's out. It's like not over yet. And that's like actually really kind of very precious time. And what was the little like, oh, yeah, no hatting, no chatting, no patting. Right. So you're not supposed to put a hat on the baby that like interrupts the hormones and the like bonding between the mom and the baby.
Yeah, and unless you're like outside in the tundra, your baby's gonna be warm because it's on you.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why people are so obsessed with like baby kids hats. Wearing hats. Yeah,
I mean they're cute, but especially in like the first couple weeks, it's super important not to have one on the baby because it really does affect the like because just the smell of your baby triggers hormones in the mom's body that intensify like oxytocin and things that intensify the bond. Like, why would you want to interrupt that? But that's the kind of thing, like, I've never heard anyone talk about that before, ever. So it's really, I found the class really interesting. I really cannot handle the seating situation. It's a beautiful space, but, like, they've got us on folding chairs, and they're so uncomfortable, and, like, ugh.
Yeah, they're brutal. There's like, one couch that we've tried to get every day, so we get there early. We only got it once.
But even then, I wasn't comfortable the whole time, yeah. You know? Like, it's really bad seating situation for, like, pregnant and just regular people anyway but then so the no hatting no chatting is like that's the like don't get on your phone and start telling everybody
mm-hmm.
because it just takes you right out of the moment and you know the baby's not going to be any less born in an hour or two and then no patting is like don't pass the baby around right away you really need it's really important for like the mom and the baby to just do their tummy do their like skin to skin physical contact as much as possible and for as long as possible. So I'm like really, I feel like I'm going to be very protective of that space. And I don't think it's going to be an issue because we have a doula who really understands that and we have midwives who understand that. So that's not an issue. But I am getting anxious about the potential for people to show up.
But nobody, you're talking about my family.
Yes.
But none of them know that I'm planning to have a home birth. So they can go wherever they want. They may not find me.
Yeah.
And if we do end up in the hospital and they find us, I have no problem telling everyone to tell them to go away.
Yeah. That's true. And the people we have there will have no problem ejecting them.
Also, I just can't see, maybe Julian, but I really, my brother. I doubt that he's going to come here all the way from Ontario and just hang out until I give birth. Yeah. No, he's not going
to
do that.
I know. And your mom informed you today that, like, your brothers are going to come to the hospital whether you want them to or not. It's like...
And then Kingsley, I couldn't actually see him doing that. I think
like
he
they'll come when you invite them.
Yeah.
But I just, like, I don't know. The more we talk about it in our class and the more I think about it and the more I, like, the closer it gets, the more, like, protective I feel about that whole experience and, like, trying to make it as intimate and as, like, special as we can.
And I think it will be. I don't think it's going to be a fight.
No, I don't think so either. I just, like, really don't want to have to worry about people interrupting or impeding that experience.
I honestly don't think it's going to be an issue.
All right. Well, if you don't think so, then that's good to know.
Also, my brothers say things to my mom in complete sarcasm, and she doesn't get that it's sarcastic.
Oh, yeah. There's that. That's true.
So that could also be it.
Yeah.
But
I think you should start lying to her about the due date, because your mom will try and show up anywhere. I could see a situation where she thinks it's happening because she hasn't heard from you for 2 days, which I keep telling Ange, like, got to start going, like, more days between the time you talk to her. Because
I don't see what's wrong with calling her in between a contraction.
Because what if you don't have that chance? What if you can't? What if you're, like, in a headspace where you can't do that? I'm just saying, like, you don't know it's going to be possible. So I think to prepare, it's better to kind of, like, space out your contact now so that it's not so abrupt when you're in labor. Anyway, I don't know. I just want it to be really, I don't know, the more, like, birth videos we watch and the more, like, we hear stories and we talk to people about it, just, like, I'm really excited for it. I'm really, really excited for that. Like,
I just want you to trust me in knowing that I know how to deal with my mom.
I do.
Okay.
I do. I also trust that your mom is fucking unpredictable.
Yeah.
And this is brand new. So even though you know how to deal with your mom, you don't know how to deal with your mom in this circumstance. She's never been in this position. So.
No, but am I not really good at predicting her behavior?
Usually, yeah.
Yeah.
But. So. I'm just saying, there's no frame of reference here. That's all.
Mm-hmm.
I'm actually kind of interested to see how my family reacts around then, too. I mean, they know that we're probably going to do a home birth. And they know that they're not invited.
They're not welcome.
Well, no. I mean, they know that, you know, we haven't asked any of them to be there. So I think they probably figured out that that's not happening, which I think is normal. I don't think any of them would expect to be there. Just because, like, it's not, you know, that's not normal, really, I don't think, to have, like, 18 different people there. Like, some people do it, but.
Are you going to want any of them there when you give birth?
Probably. Maybe. I don't know.
Who would you want
there? The way I look at it is that the birth is the thing that's happening to the mother. So it's whatever the mother, you know, the birthing mother wants.
So I got an extra person, never... and that was Sarah. And then when you give birth, you get an extra person. Who's that going to be?
I don't know. We'll see. It depends.
You wanna whisper it to me?
No.
You want to blink?
No. I just think that, like, I would never think to ask your mom to be there for my birth. So why would you ask my mom to be there for your birth?
Yeah.
Because that's what it is. It's like, yeah, they're obviously going to come and meet the baby after she's born. But that's not the same as, like, being there for the birth. That's, like, a very, very intimate, very, like, intense thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm, like, 100% sure my mom would be great, although I have concerns about what she would think about, you know, not being in a hospital, because I already know what her opinion is about that.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I don't know. I mean, our life is going to be very different by the time I'm giving birth, so who fucking knows what's going to happen, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not really thinking about me. I can't think of anything. Like, I feel like early on I felt a little bit jealous, not like jealous, but just like, oh, this is so fun and special, and like, oh, I wish this was happening to me this time. Not that that, like, means that I think that we did it in the wrong order or anything, but it's all those thoughts are gone now. I'm just like, this is just happening to us. It's, you know, it's happening to you. I don't know. It's different. It's like a shift somehow.
You've just accepted it.
I guess
so.
You just
accepted that I'm better than you and I'm the center of attention.
I wouldn't use those words, but yes. Yeah. Anyway, so I have been doing some reading. Because, I mean, we know kind of what the laws and situation is around queer families and rights and laws and stuff for us. But then I was like, what about all of Canada? Like, is it?
No, in Ontario, you have to adopt.
I was just like kind of looking into that kind of stuff. And what came up was census stuff about the number of same-sex families, basically, in Canada. I found this really interesting. So it says, in 2011, the number of children aged 24 and under living with a female same-sex parents was 7,700.
So that's all of Canada.
In all of Canada. So that's 5 years ago. But in the same year, in the same like set of statistics, the number of children aged 24 and under living with male same-sex parents in 2011, what would be your guess?
2,400.
1,900.
Wow.
Such a huge difference, right? So I'm really curious to see what the statistics tell us now. Okay, so this article is same-sex spousal and family rights in Canada. So it's just like a Canadian law website, just kind of giving you an overview. And it says that lesbians and homosexual men in Canada have almost the same rights and responsibilities as heterosexual Canadians.
Almost? Yay!
Yeah.
I love almost.
Almost. I was like, almost? And it's because in BC, it's the same. Like, we're equal. It's the same. Ontario, it's almost the same.
No, you still have to adopt, like yeah. I said.
Yeah. But in some places, the problem, the disparity, is because a case hasn't come up, so there's no precedent. So in certain provinces, there's different rights in like parental, like in divorce, basically. Though it is now possible to get a divorce across the country, complete equality remains elusive because it is the provinces which have the right to pass laws about spousal and child support and the division of family property when a marriage ends. If two men marry and divorce in Ontario, their rights under the Family Law Act are the same as they would be if they were a man and a woman. In Nova Scotia, on the other hand, spouse is defined in matrimonial property legislation as either a man or a woman married to each other, so the men would have to take a charter challenge to advance their property rights. So I found that kind of interesting. In some provinces, for example, BC and Ontario, lesbian and gay couples who live together have the same rights and responsibilities as heterosexual common law partners. That includes a right to seek spousal maintenance or child maintenance when the relationship ends. But in other provinces in Canada, no test case has been brought and no legislation has been passed, so the rights of common law same-sex couples are not yet clarified. So it's like not exactly equal, but it's not like laws or like rights are being withheld. It just hasn't been challenged yet, basically.
So nobody really knows.
Yeah, which is kind of weird because it's mm-hmm. like up in the air in some provinces, like whether you would be able to. But I feel like it's also kind of a hard thing to measure because there's no hard and fast precedent when it comes to like, you know, child support, spousal maintenance, all the kind of stuff that comes with like divorce. There's not like a hard and fast rule.
Mm-hmm.
It's generally case by case basis. So it's pretty equal, I would say. So the other thing I was looking into, I don't know if this is going to be interesting to you because it doesn't directly pertain to you, but it's more about the non-pregnant parent. And so this, I just found this really funny because it was like all a discussion about like, what do you call them? So this woman writes, a friend of mine is in a long-term relationship with her female partner. After deciding they wanted a family, my friend's girlfriend got pregnant. Normally when talking about a couple expecting a baby, you would use phrases like an expectant mother-to-be, i.e. the woman is pregnant, or an expectant father-to-be, i.e. the man's partner is pregnant. According to my friend, having used the traditional phrases so far has led to people saying things like, but you're not even showing, or, well, I don't think you should be drinking. She's taken to humorously calling herself the father-to-be instead, which has got me wondering. How would you convey the message that although somebody is a mother-to-be, they're not the one that's pregnant? So what do you think?
Wouldn't you say my wife is pregnant or my whoever is pregnant?
I guess so. Like, that's pretty straightforward, but
I just answered your question. Mic drop.
Well, I mean, some of the answers here made me kind of laugh. Some of them are pretty straightforward, too. But my partner / spouse / significant other is pregnant. Or you could probably say something very American, such as the non-carrying partner. Or something like the non-biological mother-to-be, even. The non-baby mama. Just kidding. Please don't call her that. Given recent advances in gene splicing, somebody goes into how, like, possibly you will be able to both be. It's like, yeah, okay, cool, thanks. That's not what we're asking. Using the inverted gender pronoun for the partner in a homosexual relationship who is not physically pregnant is entirely sensible, although a bit odd. If you want an alternative, parent-to-be is a fair term which is not mismatched on gender and does not include the same health restrictions as mother-to-be. Of course, one wonders how you would describe a woman who is expecting a child through a surrogate. So, like, brought up this whole... I thought it was kind of an interesting train of thought here. Yeah. It's like, every time you think about this, and like, anytime this sort of naming and the, like, descriptors come up for us, it's sort of, it, like, brings up this, like, yeah, what, how much information am I supposed to tell somebody I don't know that well, or an acquaintance or a stranger, or, like, you know, and Queer Mama had a video about this too, like, you know, everyone is trying to be, like, understanding and get the sort of relationship and who belongs to who genetically and all this stuff, and it's like, but why? Like, why does anybody need to know that stuff if you, like, don't, if you're just walking down the street and someone says, oh, that baby has, your baby has your eyes, and it's like, no, it doesn't. It's not possible. You know, like, what is, I guess it's not about.
People are just curious.
I know, and I don't think that's wrong, but it's just sort of, like, a strange thing. Like, why does everyone need to, like, why do we need to know? Why do we need to know that stuff? Because even without, like, queer families, kids are not necessarily related to their parents. The people that are raising them aren't necessarily their parents. Yeah. You know, there's, like, so many different family structures. It just seems like such a strange thing that we have in our society. We still have this, like, sort of trend towards assuming the kind of normal family structure.
When, yeah, because that's so many... what's most visible.
Yeah, I guess
that's
so.
What's in advertisements. That's what's on TV. That's what you're going to first assume. So because another... it's so difficult to keep all the options in your mind at one time.
But that's the thing, though. That's, like, that's what makes me think, like, why try then? Why not just say, oh, are you the parents?
Yeah, but do you do that? I don't think I do. I think I fall into that as well. When I see someone, unless they're, like, super obviously, like, okay, you no, must but I be think, gay.
I don't think I do that because even, like, I mean, I've had weird questions like that throughout my life because I've been an aunt since I was 13. So I've had people, like, when I'm with my niece and nephew, or when it was just the two of them when they were little, ask me, like, oh, are you their mother? So because that always happened to me, I don't assume anything, really, of other people. Because I'd be like, no, these are my niece. This is my niece and nephew. I'm 16. No, these aren't my kids. You know?
They're my 18-year-old sisters.
When I was 16, she was 20, well, actually. Whatever.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. But yeah, it's like a weird, I don't know. It just, like, I think we're going to be confronted with it. And then it's like, it's not just like what we want to tell people. It's like, okay, then our daughter's going to get older and she's going to have to explain it. And how much focus and emphasis and, like, conversation do you have to have around that kind of stuff? And is it going to be like...
I think it's better to have the conversations. I mean, it can suck because you have to do it a lot, mm-hmm. and often, and mm-hmm. it can get tedious. But I think part of the problem is the fact that we don't have those conversations. And because a lot of people do not want to talk about it because it's annoying, mm-hmm. and because you feel like everyone should know and people shouldn't assume, but it's like this podcast, like, people need to know, mm-hmm. so having those conversations and being like, oh no, there's no father, actually, me and my wife conceived her through donor insemination. And then if they have questions, just, you know, fucking what? Answer them.
Dan Savage had a little rant about that on his show, because he was like, yeah, it was some story about a male same-sex couple who had kids and saying that, like, there is no mother. And he was like, when people would ask, you know, me and Terry about our son and who his mother is, and we'd be like, oh, his mother is so-and-so and she lives here and she, you know, made a decision to, because she couldn't provide the kind of life that she wanted for her son, to give him up for adoption, but we still are in contact with her. He's like, I think it's really, he was saying his point, and I hadn't considered this, was that, like, it's really weird. It's a weird message to say there's no mother, because not being a mother is not the same as being a parent, right? You can be a mother and not be a parent. You can be a father and not be a parent. So, and what kind of message is that telling your kid if all they're hearing is, like, there's no mother, there's no mother? It's like, then they're going to feel weird about asking if they have questions about their mother, because they will. That's totally okay and normal and, like, will come up. Yeah. So I don't think it's necessary to say, like, there's no father, but you just say, you know, we're her parents and we conceived her through donor insemination.
Yeah, that's what I just said.
Well, no, but, like, but you said there's no father. So I don't think that I kind of agree with Dan, which I had never even considered before, that, like, there, you shouldn't negate their existence. but just downplay or, like, you know, be honest about their involvement.
Yeah. Do you think it would be funny if we only dressed our daughter in, like, hanging out with daddy onesies?
No.
Like, only?
No.
For, like, a week?
No. Like, not at all. Like, not we're at all? Not going to have any of those clothes.
Oh.
It's confusing. I think it's mostly just confusing.
Okay, well, what about this? Having her wear holiday onesies, but at the wrong holiday. So, like, Easter onesies at Halloween.
Anybody else think this is funny? Like, seriously, she's been going on about this, like, for, like, a week now.
Canada Day at Christmas.
I don't know why this is funny. It just makes you look unorganized.
I think it's funny. Or if you only dress your kid in holiday onesies all the time.
That would be expensive,
what happens to
those
holiday onesies? You wear them one day, and then the kid grows out of them.
I think we should just not have holiday onesies.
Probably. That's true.
Like, it's a weird thing. Why do you have to dress for, like, you know, kids will get, like, people in general will get, like, oh, I got a nice dress for the holidays. That's fine. Why does it have to say, like, it's Christmas? It's my first Christmas on your fucking clothes. I really don't understand why clothing for children has to have so many sayings on it.
Did we already talk about this?
We talked about how gendered everything is, and we talked about the obnoxious gendered sayings, but, like, everything in stores is, like, hanging around, like, they're just, like, the dumbest things. Like, they're not funny and they're not cute. So what is the point?
I think what we were, because we went into this Carter's store.
Carter's and Oshkosh.
And Oshkosh, and one of the shirts was, like, little macho man.
Yeah.
And I think our friend said, like, if you're really that macho, I don't think you need to wear a shirt that says it. And I was like, yeah, what are these babies overcompensating for? Like, what the hell? Because they're all handsome, good looking.
The
cutie.
Ones that really
I'm
fucking weird
looking.
Me out are like, mom's cute, I'm cute, dad's lucky. What? Or, like, constantly talking about how attractive your parents are on your shirt. Like, I guarantee you those kids do not give a shit what their parents look like.
Yeah, and like, what you're basically saying is, like,
I'm hot.
More people want to fuck my mom than they want to fuck, like, your mom or other people's mom.
Or just, like, it's the parents being like, I want people to read my kid's shirt and think I'm sexy.
Yeah, what? Why?
Why don't you just wear a shirt that says sexy?
Yeah.
Or something dumb like that. Ugh.
And why don't, like,
kids' clothes,
if you,
like,
flip
really,
it around, would you wear a shirt that said, like, my baby's the cutest in town? That would be fucking obnoxious. And there's a reason why we
It
don't...
is obnoxious. Yeah. That's why I hate it. I'm having a really hard time with kids' clothes. It, not only is it, like, insanely...
You've joined my side.
I can't help it because I've been looking. I've been shopping more. So I keep getting it, like, thrown in my face. Like, just the fact that there's a boy's clothes, boy baby clothes, and girl baby clothes. They're the same. They have the same bodies. I actually asked one of my... I asked one of my coworkers last night. I was looking at on the Gap because I was. And I was like, can you tell me what it is about these things that make them better suited for a girl than a boy? And he's like, well, obviously there's more room for their boobs and and less room for their junk. And I was like, right? It's so weird. It's so weird. And stripes, apparently that's girls aren't supposed
to
wear.
Yeah, I was looking at these onesies. They were gray and white and gray. And then brown, I think, like some shade of, like, whatever brown.
Mm-hmm.
Boys. I didn't realize that gray and white and gray and brown were boy colors.
Yeah, they're like the most neutral colors on the planet, but those are for boys.
Yeah, what the fuck?
And then at fucking Carter's, they had this whole section that was like little firefighter jackets and police jackets and, like, rescue, all these things. And it was the boy section. I was like, because of course a girl would never do those things.
No.
Oh, it just makes me so angry.
The vaginas would get in the way.
Those labia would just, like, impede their capability of thinking. It's so dumb.
Yeah.
Oh my God, speak of the devil. Guess who's calling Edge's phone right now?
Hello?
Hi, sweetheart.
Hi, Mom. How are you?
Well, I've got 19 missed calls.
Cool.
What does that mean? Somebody rang and I didn't answer?
Yep.
But I can't tell who it is.
No.
Okay. Well, guess what else it is?
You already told me, and I gotta go, Mom. I'm just in the middle of doing something.
No, I didn't tell you.
Okay, well, I gotta go. I'll call you later, okay?
I need to ask you a couple of questions, though.
Okay, well, I'll call you later.
She unraveled my knitting.
Okay, I'll call you later.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye. So moving on.
How are you? I have 19 missed calls. Oh, that answers my question. You should really never ask her how she is.
No. The other thing that I've been thinking about, why do parents always die in Disney movies? Or one of them is dead. Like, what? Why?
Sets up conflict, I guess. Maybe it's supposed to, like, make kids be thankful for what they have. It's fucking weird. I don't know. Kids movies weird me out.
Can you think of any Disney movie that...
Am I thinking about all this stuff too much? I think we're both thinking about all this stuff too much.
No, but can you think of, like, any Disney movie where one parent isn't dead or dies in the movie? The Little Mermaid only had a dad. Belle only has a dad in Beauty and the Beast. Simba has both parents, but his dad dies. Bambi's mom dies. Cinderella has no parents, lives with, like, evil stepmother. Still, there's no dad around.
She has a dad.
Does she?
That's how she has a stepmom.
Okay, well, her mom's dead anyway. She has
mm-hmm.
a stepmom.
Mm-hmm.
But you never see the dad in Cinderella, do you?
Snow White has a dad and a stepmom. How about the newer ones? Mulan doesn't have a mom. I think she doesn't have any parents.
Finding Nemo, mom dies.
It's weird. Right? It's like matricide across the board.
Yeah, definitely more moms dead.
Why? What is the thing?
I don't know. It's so weird.
What about Brave? You saw that one.
Yeah, only a dad, I think.
Hmm.
And that's Pixar.
Whatever.
Kids are they movies. The same thing? I don't know. No. Anyway.
Disney and Pixar.
It's so weird. Yeah. It's so weird. Like, what does that mean? Why? Is it just like...
make kids hold on to their mommies better? I don't know. I don't know. This is the thing. Like, I feel like I'm being too cerebral about everything.
Me too.
And I it's probably really common. And I know a lot of my friends do think about this stuff as well. And that a lot of my friends are like anti-princess and like trying not to gender their babies and all that stuff. And I totally get why we do this. But it just seems like completely inevitable. And everybody says, and I think this is true, the more you try and prevent it, the more they're likely to like be drawn to it.
Yeah, so I definitely need to, like,
calm your
have
tits.
A good balance between being like, oh, you want that? That's fine. No big deal. I don't care. And but then not offering it.
And not being like, let's do your entire room in princesses.
Because you're going to be a princess and your daddy's little princess because it says so on your shirt.
And princesses don't do anything. They just sit around and wait to get rescued. Ugh. It's one of those things, too, where you have to kind of, like, look back and, I mean, you have a very different experience with this. I was so girly. I was, like, very gendered, very into pink and frilly things and dresses and doing my hair and doing my makeup and doing my nails and all of that stuff. And I was into the princesses. Belle was my, like, favorite, which I think is kind of cool because she's really smart and not shallow. But she was still a princess.
And she still gave up everything to be
for a man.
A pretty abusive
yes.
situation.
Yes. Which says maybe something about me. But anyways, I still ended up growing up into a person who is like very much a feminist and does not feel limited by my gender. So
I think the thing is to yeah. is just to not be like, my kid can never watch movies or only watch movies that are perfect because none of them are.
Yeah.
But just have conversations
about
it.
Well, and I think that's the thing. Like, it's not about limiting contact. It's about managing the conversation. And if you're able to say, like, what do you think about the fact that Belle is with a beast who's not very nice to her? You know? And, like, get the kid thinking instead of just, like, this is how you should be. Mm-hmm. Or, like, just nothing. You know? I think the lack of conversation is worse.
Yeah.
So definitely. I think maybe we should probably calm down and everything will just be fine.
What's something that you wish that your parents had talked to you about?
Like, at what age?
Any age.
That's a very loaded question.
Jackie's parents just put the podcast down for like 5 minutes.
They don't listen. Anyway, I think, well, for one, nobody ever talked to me about sex, which I think is really not good for any kid. let alone like a conversation about like different sexualities. I never even considered that I could be something other than straight until I was like 18. Even though there's like, looking back, there's very clear signs that like that was obviously an interest of mine.
Mm-hmm.
But not something I think my parents would have noticed. But yeah, never being talked to about sex at all and just having that be left to the school to do was like not great. But I think that's true of like almost every parent.
Yeah.
Like most parents, especially to people our age, didn't have very comprehensive sex education at school or at home. So I think that's one big one. Another one is like, I don't know how to say this without like sounding really critical, but just like having real discussions about how to handle your feelings and how to understand them and like process them. I think that was really lacking.
Mm-hmm.
My family was very much like, we're just going to yell at each other. And it was all about anger.
Yeah.
And nobody ever like thought like, hey, this isn't healthy.
When the anger happened in your family, mm-hmm. like the blow up or whatever it was,
mm-hmm.
what was the resolve? Like, what was the calm down from that?
It depends on the circumstance. If it was like us getting in trouble for being like for fighting with each other, like say my brother and I were fighting, which happened all the time because we're kids, we'd just get in trouble and like sent to our rooms.
And then what happened when you came out of your room?
Well, usually it was like for the rest of the night. So
what happened the next morning?
Just wake up the next morning and go back to normal. So that was sort of the thing. Like,
so there was no resolve.
No. If it was like, yeah, I don't really remember. And I mean, acknowledging that like kids don't, just memory in general is like flawed. But I don't really remember a whole lot of like debrief. And I think that kind of stuff's really important. And I think that's probably indicative of like a lot of the emotional kind of troubles in my family, that I think the reason there was no conversation around it is because maybe there wasn't even an awareness of it.
Mm-hmm.
And that seemed, I think that was like pretty normal for both my parents' families too. So
did you ever hear your parents apologize for things? Did your parents ever apologize to things like, for things to you?
Every so often, like rarely.
What was it for?
One that just popped into my head when you said that was when I was sick, and I was like, I don't remember how old I was. I think I was like maybe 6 or 7, and I was sick, and my dad had given me cough medicine, and I guess he had given me too much, so it like knocked me out. So I actually didn't wake up when I had to pee, and I peed my pants, and I came downstairs and I was crying because I was so embarrassed and I was upset and I felt like crap and I was like covered in piss, and he just started laughing. He was like, I'm sorry, Jack, that's my fault. Which was like, I just said,
oh. Sorry, but how old were you?
I was 6 or 7.
Okay,
as far as I remember. But it wasn't the norm. It wasn't like the standard that,
but like out of like
if they kind of overreacted to something,
yeah,
they wouldn't really own that. But I don't even know if they would realize that they had overreacted.
Hmm.
I think everything was sort of tied into like whatever they were dealing with at the time. And like as a kid, I was pretty oblivious to all of my parents' like relationship problems, even though looking back, I'm like, how did I not know that they were like really on the rocks? I mean, when you're a kid, you look for the positives. Like it was all about like a confirmation bias. I was always telling myself like, I'm lucky my parents are still together. You know, I have this like whole family. We're like totally great. And, you know, you see your parents kiss and you see your parents like go on a date and you're like, oh, they're fine. Or you even, like, even just, like, seeing them fight but know that, like, it wasn't the worst thing.
Yeah.
I guess.
How did your parents tell you that they were going to divorce?
My mom was, like, I remember, it's kind of fuzzy, but I remember that my mom was crying and she was in her bedroom. And my dad came into my room and told me he was going to move out.
That's it?
Pretty much. I mean, that's what I remember. I was 13, so.
How did he tell you? He was just like, I'm moving out. Bye.
He just said, I'm going to move out. Honestly, that's the only thing I actually remember.
But he told you alone?
Yeah.
Where were your other siblings?
I don't know. I don't think they were home.
And then what'd you do?
Cried a lot. I don't really, and that's like, I think that's like one of the big ones for me, is that really nobody in my family talked to us about how we were feeling or what we were going through when my parents split up. Nobody. If they did, I don't remember it at all, and it didn't make an impact on me. I talked to my friends, obviously, but I don't remember any significant, like, adult in my life. And, like, my mom was going through so much on her own, I don't think that she was capable of it. My dad would talk to us, but it was more about, like, managing our expectations of him or of the situation.
Okay.
Because obviously we had a lot of problems with it, with the whole situation, and like the fact that he was with somebody else right away. We didn't like it. We weren't happy about it. So he was just trying to convince us that it was okay.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of just split us all apart. Like, none of us really came together to talk about it or deal with it. My sister was already out of the house and had her own kids. And my brother and I just didn't, I don't know. He just like shut off. He couldn't deal with it. And I just tried to figure it out on my own.
Did he shut off or did he just not care?
No, he cared.
Yeah.
Yeah, he cared. He just didn't know how to deal with it. So he just didn't. He just shoved it all down. And that was probably...
How do you know he cared?
Because I know him. He's more sensitive than people think.
No, I'm not saying that. I'm just saying some kids, like when my parents got divorced, I was like, fucking divorce already. Like, shut the fuck up, you guys. Like,
yeah, it was not like that for us. It was not like that for us at all, but we can't compare our families.
No, I know, but I'm saying it's possible that he could see that they weren't happy, no, and that maybe he was so. Like, fuck.
I don't think so. I think he was 12, I guess, at the time, and I think without having anybody talking to either of us to say, like, hey, how are you doing? How is this making you feel? It's okay if you feel angry. It's okay if you feel sad. It's, you know, just anything, any kind of emotional support whatsoever. Instead, we were both kind of put in the middle, and it really sucked. It really sucked. They both, I think my parents dealt with it really poorly. And, I mean, I'm not saying that I would be perfect at it if I had to go through that, but I think a lot of that comes from, like, getting married really young and not really getting to a place before you have kids where you're, like, really solid in your relationship. Obviously, right? Obviously. If they had, they probably wouldn't have gone divorced.
Mm-hmm.
Or if they had waited, maybe they wouldn't have ended up together because... they're so different. Like, they're so not right for each other, which at this point in my life is, like, so apparent.
Yeah.
But I think my brother didn't know how to deal with it, and nobody was telling him what to do or how to deal with it or even helping him. It just, he was upset and hurt by it because, of course, you're going to be upset and hurt by the fact that your family is splitting apart,
mm-hmm.
especially as the youngest kid.
And the only boy, your dad's moving out.
Mm-hmm. And so I think it was maybe even harder for Matt than it was for me in some ways, because I don't know if it's like the way, if it's like the sort of typical guy being socialized to not have feelings thing, or if it's just who I am as like a person that like, I can't hide my feelings really. So I couldn't stuff it down no matter how much I wanted to, I couldn't. Which led to a lot more drama from me, I guess, drama or whatever, like just actual feelings and like having tons of conflict with both parents at different times. And like, I was very much like on my mom's side and then would swing the other direction and then be on my dad's side and then be mad at my mom. And like, and they both fed into that and like would like feed me shit. I shouldn't have heard any of their shit, basically. Like, you should never tell your kids, like, oh, your mom does this and I hate that, or oh, your father this and your father that. And they both did that so much, and it totally fucked with my head.
Mm-hmm.
So it really negatively affected my relationship with both of my parents at different times. But Matt would hear that stuff, and I think he just internalized it. Like, I think he just took it in and shoved it down. And that's, I think, why he was such an angry teenager. Like, he wasn't, like, destructive or anything, but he was pretty angry. So I mean, when that's like your only model is anger, which is really what we saw,
mm-hmm.
That's what happens to you. So it's taken a lot of my adult life to kind of get a handle on the anger and like get to the point where I don't have to be angry. I can actually just feel my real feelings. I can feel sad, I can feel disappointed, I can feel hurt. I can,
but you were kind of, you've told me in the past that like your family used to give you a hard time about being too sensitive.
Yes.
When you would like show your emotions.
Yes. That was definitely like put up as like a weakness of mine.
So like when you would cry
I was being too sensitive. I was being, you know, too dramatic or whatever.
Mm-hmm. And then what did that, like, what message did that send to you?
That there's something wrong with the way I was, like, dealing with my emotions.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that kind of pushed me towards being more angry. Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, I think that would be the biggest thing I would have liked if they had. But it's like what I'm asking for is something that I don't think they were capable of at the time. So, like, you have to be kind of in touch with your own emotions in order to educate a kid about theirs. And I don't think they were, which was probably a huge part of, like, what was going on with them.
Mm-hmm.
How about you?
What about me?
What do you wish your parents had talked to you about?
I wish that, honestly, I wish that someone had talked to me about my period. Because I didn't know.
Nobody about, said anything?
Like, we had it in health class, but I think that, one, I wasn't paying enough attention because I was, like, mortified. And
yeah, that's
another
normal.
One, like, I ran away because I didn't want to do it. Like, I was like, I'm not going. And I, like, went and, like, hung out in the bathroom by myself. So when I got my period, I thought, yeah, okay, so this is
you
what this
like,
is.
You had, like, a Carrie moment? You were like, oh, my God, I'm dying.
No, I, well, kind of. I got my period and I was like, okay, I know what this is. But I didn't realize it lasted for days.
Mm.
So I kind of just, like, hid out in my room and was like, well, how do I deal with this? And was just expecting it to go away.
So you were just, like, bleeding into your underwear, like, not knowing what to do with yourself?
Yeah, I think so. I can't remember what I did. And then I went and told my mom, I was like, I think that I have my period, but I think there's something wrong. And then she told me, like, no, you bleed for days. And I was like, oh, awesome.
Thanks for the update.
Yeah.
That's such a hard question to answer for you, especially, I think.
It is, because I feel like there's maybe some things that I wish they hadn't talked to me about.
Like what?
Like my mom talking to me about her suicidal ideations when I was way too young.
Mm.
To understand, and the message that I was getting was that my mom is going to die and leave me. And that was, like, terrifying.
Yeah.
Because I was so young. Like, it's one of my first memories. And I know what house we were in, and we only lived there until I was about 5. So I was younger than 5.
I know this about you, and I've heard you say this before, and it just breaks my heart every time I hear it. Like, yeah. I could cry. It's awful. It's so awful.
Yeah, so maybe don't do that.
Don't be suicidal and tell your kid all about it mm-hmm. when they're like 4.
Just brought the whole thing down. Way down.
That was your doing. You asked all about this.
Yeah.
It's got all divorced.
Well, I just think we talk about my family a lot. We don't hear much about yours.
Yeah.
You're not as sherry.
Well, part of that is that my family might. Some of them do listen.
But I feel like this is stuff that you would say to them. And that you have said to them.
Yeah, that's true. As everybody knows now, I'm very open. And my family knows that too. Mm-hmm. And I think they finally stopped seeing the fact that I wear my heart on my sleeve as a weakness, and finally are seeing that, like, actually it's a strength. My ability to empathize and, like, deal with my emotions and help other people deal with theirs is a strength.
Mm-hmm.
And it took a long time for me to kind of own that, which, you know, I don't know, maybe it made me better at it or more steadfast in my, like, resolve to be like this. But I really don't have a choice. This is just who I am. I cannot hide my feelings. It's so, sometimes it's really annoying. Like, sometimes you don't want to feel really frustrated, or sometimes you don't want to be to the point of tears because you, like, are disappointed in yourself about something, or, like, you know, I've had, like, a moment or two at work where I'm, like, so frustrated and I'm about to cry and I'm like, I'm not doing this here, just stop it, pull yourself together, you know. But most of the time it's
the tears of futility. There's this whole cycle that I studied in school, and it's about how to build resilience in kids. And there's this theory about how when a kid feels anxiety or has come up with a problem, if they turn to anger, then that's sort of like a quick release, and it doesn't actually solve anything, and they go right back to anxiety, frustration again.
Mm-hmm.
But if they bypass the anger and go into just, like, crying and being like, fuck, there's nothing I can do. I don't mm-hmm. know what else to do. I'm just going to cry.
Mm-hmm.
Then you're actually coping. Mm-hmm. That is a coping mechanism.
That's why they say you have to feel your feelings.
Yeah.
That's what they're there for. They're called feelings. You have to feel them. It's right in the word.
And that's why some people, like, get drunk and they just cry, because they need to do that. Mm-hmm. Because some people just stuff and stuff and stuff until, you know, mm-hmm. they get drunk and they just, like, let it all spill out. Because mm-hmm. It's not going anywhere.
Yeah.
You just end up like this garbage can full of all your emotions and all your feelings, and it's going to fall over one way or another. You're either going to keep going to anger and become abusive, or you're just going to become this person no one wants to be around because you fucking drink all the time and, like, cry. Or
I mean, that's, and I think that's, like, a fundamental sort of
do drugs.
Split in children. But how do you change it? That's the real question. Like, if you see a kid who's trending towards anger, how do you break that open?
It's difficult.
Because, I mean, I even with, like, my crazy, like, emotional self, was still ended up being an angry person for a while.
Mm-hmm.
For a long time, probably.
Well, it's still a struggle for everyone, I think,
mm-hmm.
who've grown up in, like, hard circumstances. I mean,
I had hard times as a kid, but I wouldn't say that my childhood was bad. And I think part of that is because the foundation was great. Like, I have really great, happy memories from when I was little. But I think that's why I'm, like, an okay person, because I had all that good before that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, 12 years of good is a lot of good.
Yeah. Even for people who are adults, when their parents get divorced and they don't even live with them, it's still really hard.
Mm-hmm.
I don't identify with that at all.
Mm-hmm.
And that was hard for me.
Well, because, like, also for you, like, divorce is, like, a blip compared to the other shit that was going on in your family and in your life, right? So,
oh, yeah.
It's like, okay, cool, my parents aren't together anymore, but my mom's still a suicidal alcoholic.
But at least she doesn't chase my dad around the house with a knife because they don't live together anymore,
yeah.
Thankfully.
But also, now I never see my dad.
Which I didn't care about, like, if I'm being totally honest. Which partially has to do with the fact that my mom kind of turned me against him.
Mm-hmm.
It took me a long time before I actually realized my dad wasn't a bad guy.
He just wasn't there.
He just wasn't around, which, like, you know what? I don't blame you. I probably would have abandoned my child to get away from my mom at points as well.
He was also, like, not a whole person at the time either. He was still really lost in his, like, own addiction and yeah. his own shit. So it's, like, it's kind of impressive, I think, that you're able to look at him as a human being and not just, like, be disappointed by him as a dad, because I think most people would feel like that. Most people would be like, I don't give a shit what you were dealing with. You were supposed to be my dad and you weren't there.
Yeah.
But you actually said this to me one time, and it was like a home truth that you were like,
truth bomb.
Yeah, you were like, you know, I used to think my dad was a bad person, but actually him not being there was way less damaging than my mom actually being there. And I was like, oh damn, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But that thing that parents do to their kids, like turning them against each other, like, oh, it's so shitty. It's never okay to, like, poison your kid's relationship with their other parent because you guys don't get along anymore. It's not okay.
Yeah.
It's like your job as a parent to protect that relationship, because that's the most important thing, is your kid's well-being.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter what you two have going on. You have to keep that separate from your kid.
Yeah. My mom used to always talk about how she thought my dad was retarded. Mm-hmm. That's her words.
Mm-hmm.
She would say, I think he's like, he's she really dumb and he can't do this. And she would talk about his intelligence all the time. And so I always worried that I was, like, going to be dumb, too,
mm-hmm.
when I was little. I was like, well, he's my dad. That means that I'm, like, part of him.
Mm-hmm.
What if I'm, like, dumb, too, and I can't spell and I can't do things? So, like,
aww.
All she did was make me feel insecure about myself.
Mm-hmm.
And my dad is not, like, he's not the smartest guy in the world, but he's not retarded.
No, he's a perfectly average human being with his level of intelligence. He's not an intellectual. That's fine.
No.
Not everybody has to be. Your mom is, and that didn't help her, so, you know.
Yeah.
It's maybe, like, a problem sometimes. I feel like the people who are, like, kind of very analytical and thoughtful get to, like, an existential place, and that's, like, a very dangerous ground for someone who's suicidal, right? If you can't really think in, like, philosophical terms, it's harder to be like, what's the point of living?
Ignorance is bliss.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's true.
What is this podcast about?
I feel like at this point we just come in and we talk about, like, whatever.
Yeah, I know.
Like, we start with pregnancy stuff, and then it just goes into, like, but I think a lot of this is really normal, that you, like, reflect on your childhood, you reflect on your parents' parenting, when you're, like, on the precipice of becoming a parent. So I think it's very, like, relevant. Because we're learning from, like, our own experiences, which is what you're supposed to do.
Yeah.
But it wasn't really all that hard for us to figure out, like, A, don't be suicidal and, like, abusive to your kid, and B, don't get divorced, because that's really hard.
Well, I mean, get divorced if that's what's better for you. Just do it in a good way.
Yeah. Actually, we've talked about that a lot before.
We're getting divorced, you guys. We decided to announce it here.
We're never getting divorced.
I just need to get
famous
out.
Famous last words.
Jackie doesn't make good enough food.
I'm trying so hard.
No, I was actually thinking today, like, how fucked I would be if you died or if something happened to you.
Why do you always think about that? It's because of your mom that you think about that. Like, I think people think that sometimes, but you think about it a lot. And, like, when you bring it up, I think about that and I'm like, yeah, that would be the worst if you died. Of course. But I don't think about it all
like,
the time.
Oh, I would be sad. Like, obviously, I'd be sad. But I was just thinking, like, how would I even survive? Because I'm about to have a baby. Half of my income is not enough to live off me on my own.
No.
So I was just thinking in terms of that.
Oh my God, you'd have to move in with your mom.
I would never. I would move in at the greenhouse.
Yeah, you would probably live with your friends first.
Yeah.
Oh, you could have a sister wife like you've always wanted.
Okay, let's get
divorced. Aren't I like a sister wife?
No. We would have to be married to the same person.
No, but like the things that you want out of a sister wife, isn't that what you get with me?
No, I just get a wife.
Oh.
A sister wife is like having a friend around all the time.
That you're raising your kids with.
Yeah. And then you're also fucking the same dude.
Okay, well, that part we definitely don't have.
We could.
No. We couldn't.
So 99 days until our due date.
Got 99 days until a baby is
99 left balloons.
Is that your impression of German?
Yeah.
That was awful.
Need to finish painting the crib.
Oh, God. This crib. I love it. It's beautiful, but it is taking forever. Yeah, I didn't think it would take so long, but you have to get in
Which
and around.
Is the truth about everything.
That's not
that
true.
That involves painting.
Oh, yes. Okay. I thought you were going to sewer me there. I just didn't, like, you have to get in and around every single one of those goddamn little bars, and it's a long process. I've gotten 2 coats of paint on the entire crib, but there's still, like, touch-ups to be done, and then we have to seal it because we use chalk paint because it looks cute. You don't have to sand or anything. I was like, fuck, it probably would have been quicker to sand it than it would be to do it this way, but whatever. So I'm close. But we also don't even have the screws for it yet because,
Yeah.
I just want it to be done. And it's so funny, too, to me that, like, this is such a big project because the baby's not even going to sleep in the crib right away. She's not going to be in that thing for a while.
No, but the room needs to be finished.
But it's central to the room. It is. Yeah. You know, it's a big part of it. So hopefully that's, like, I'd say we're, like, 65% of the way there with the crib. And by we, I mean me.
Yeah, I'm not touching it. I said from the beginning, I was like, I'm not painting shit, motherfucker.
That was in our vows.
Yeah, it was.
So I never expected you to.
Yeah. And then we need to go through all the stuff that other people have given us and figure out what we want and what we don't want.
Yeah.
And
we need to empty out some closet space in the baby's room because that will make life easier.
Mm-hmm.
We've realized that we've been hoarding dress clothes for a decade that we almost never wear. So there's that.
Yeah. Fancy pants. When do I ever wear fancy pants?
We never wear fancy anything.
Mm-mm.
It's like okay to have like a couple like nice dresses and we'll keep all of those. But like we don't dress up. I don't have a job that I have to do it. You don't have a job that you really have to do it.
I have to look very nice, but
casual
sort
of business is the max, right? We're not wearing suits. That's not our life. So we don't need those kinds of things in our wardrobe. But it just feels so hard. It's hard for me to get rid of stuff like that because I'm like, it's not a t-shirt. It's like a dress shirt, you know? I don't want to have to buy one in case I need one day. But do I need to haul around like a dozen of them for a decade?
Yeah.
Probably not.
They're out of style, too.
Oh, I know.
And we've been writing letters to the baby.
Mm-hmm.
Did we already talk about that?
Yeah.
We did?
I don't know.
Oh, anyway. I just thought it would be cute to write her letters because I am constantly thinking things.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that I would have found that to be cool.
Totally.
When I was a kid. And so, yeah, just writing like, last night you were kicking a lot. Or,
this is what I did your today. Crib for yeah. 18 hours and now I have a headache because I've killed a bunch of brain cells. You're welcome.
Yeah, whatever it might be.
That's actually not what I've said, but it is. It's cute. It's fun and it's exciting. It makes me more excited. I cannot wait to meet her. Ugh!
I just hope that she's good looking and thin.
I kind of want to punch you in the mouth right now. I know you're kidding, but that's still like instantly irked me. I was like, nobody better talk to her about her appearance.
I'm getting more sensitive about that too.
Yeah.
I snapped at a coworker.
What?
I told you this.
Oh.
Because she was taught, she's the tiniest person.
Oh, yeah, right.
She told me that she weighs under 100 pounds. She's just like this tiny, 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 I'm going to float away in the wind girl. And she came into a meeting with a Starbucks and I was like, oh, what'd you get from Starbucks? And she goes, well, I was feeling fat. And I like turned to her and I was like, you need to change your language. And she was like,
you mommed her.
I did. And she was like, well, no, I mean, do I? I was just saying like, I got something really fatty. And I was like, whatever. And like the meeting started and then later I apologized to her. I was like, I'm sorry I snapped at you. I was just saying like, you shouldn't talk about yourself like that because
really negative and hateful yeah. towards your body.
Yeah. This is our show.
Thanks for listening to our insane non sequitur ramblings.
Yeah. Yeah.
And feel free to leave us comments and insane non sequitur ramblings.
Or send
us
questions if there's something that you really want to know. Mm-hmm. Like, totally answer them and let us know how you're doing. Because I know there's like listeners out there who have gotten pregnant. Either when we got pregnant or just before, just after, let us know what's happening with you.
Yeah, how's pregnancy for you? Mm-hmm. Are you as crazy as we are?
Yeah. Do you feel offended because we were like, bitch about hospital births and you've chosen a hospital birth?
Oh, I hope we're not alienating anybody.
Are you thinking about home birth now that we've opened your mind to the superior way? Just kidding. Just kidding. Just kidding.
I might
end up in the hospital. I might freak. Yeah.
You might. Well, I don't think that's why you wouldn't end up in the hospital because you're freaking out. You'd end up in the hospital because there's actually something legitimately
wrong.
Or
I'll just be like, no, I'm going and just power down.
I don't think you're going to do that.
We'll see.
But we won't know until it happens.
Mm-hmm.
This is all speculation.
Until next week.
This has been
the Baby Mamas. That was Jackie's idea.
Let's just not do the podcast at all.
The Baby Mamas Podcast.
Thanks for listening to the Baby Mamas Podcast. Make sure to like them on Facebook and give them a great review on iTunes. Have a good day.